was lucky enough to be at the show that was like the storm show here at MetLife Stadium, where the show didn't start until I guess it was about 10:30, ended at 2 a.m. or something like that. That was a big one. That was really a really big show for me. I think what stands out for me is that sort of every single time I go see Bruce, I end up saying that's the best show I've seen. And that's not, people might hear me say that and be like, oh, you're just saying X, you're a Bruce fan, you're a nut. But it is true.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Set Lusting Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. I am doing one of my favorite episodes where someone reached out to me via social media and says, hey, you may not know this, but I did a small little Springsteen project. Would you be interested in watching it? And my answer is always yes. And then I go, do you want to join me on the podcast? And sometimes the answer is yes, and sometimes the answer is no. But in this case, Julian Garcia was nice enough to say, absolutely, I want to join you. So welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little about yourself.
I am obviously a big Bruce fan also. I don't know if you can see the little glare there, but
yeah, I got your Western Jersey. Stars poster. That's very nice.
I live in New Jersey. I've lived here my entire life. I live in Morris County, New Jersey. I don't know if have you ever been in New Jersey?
I have been on Stan Goldstein's tour.
Okay.
I was lucky enough. I was at the second of the three shows that were MetLife, where he broke 4 hours, and I was at one of those shows. So that's the only time I've spent.
Okay. So I live in Morris County. We're about maybe 15, 20 minutes west of MetLife Stadium.
Okay.
I grew up in Bergen County about maybe by car, 5 minutes from what was Giant Stadium at the time.
Okay.
I was able to literally ride my bicycle there a few times. To check out the New York Giants when they were practicing. That was my other passion when I was a child. Giants football and Bruce music were the two big things for me.
All right.
And I was lucky to live right where I lived. I live in New Jersey. My daughter and I attended Monmouth University, but my daughter actually goes there right now. And she's actually a student employee of the Bruce Springsteen archives there. So we have that nice little tie-in also.
Yeah.
I'm just a lifelong fan. I was thinking about this the other day. It's going on, I'm going to be 50 in September. So it's over 40 years now that I'm listening to Bruce's music and just talking about him and obsessing over him at times. it's been a long time.
When were you, are you still a Giants fan?
I am a Giants fan still, yeah.
I was going to say, depending on when you were following them, I make the joke all the time as a Cowboy fan that Bruce never lets me down. Mm-hmm. while the Cowboys, on the other hand, always let me down.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where you were. People laugh at me. I was a huge Jason Garrett fan just because he was a Bruce fan, even when I should have given up. Like, this guy is not a good coach. I loved his personality and that it was a big Bruce and Dylan fan. And somebody on social media the day was talking about how horrible he was on the game the other night. And I said, I thought he was pretty good. Oh, is that Cowboy bias? I'm like, no, it's Springsteen bias. I know he loves Bruce, or you get there. So, So you talked about growing up. What kind of music was your family listening to? And then we'll get to how you discovered Bruce.
That's an interesting question, because when I was about 8 years old or so, my father had this huge silver. I believe in my mind, I remembered it being like a Sony stereo system. I think he's told me in the past that it actually wasn't Sony, but that's how I remember it. We had a great stereo system in our living room. They had these two big orange speakers that were covered with the felt coverings and all that.
Sure.
My father was an Elvis fan when he was younger. But when I was growing up, when I was 8 years old or so, 8 or 10, he was a huge fan of Meatloaf.
Okay.
And so Bat Out of Hell was really the first rock and roll album that I can ever remember listening to.
Nice.
And I didn't realize it at the time, but obviously I know now that two or three members of the E Street Band played on that album.
Yeah.
Which is, it's funny to me to think about that now, because again, I had no idea back then that was the case.
Yeah.
But it gets me wondering, hey, them being on that album, it probably has something to do with the fact that I liked that style of music.
Sure.
But I loved that album because it was so intense and so dark. And I love it. My brother and I would listen to it Friday night, Saturday night. If my parents went out, we would turn that up. So that was really the first rock album that I ever remember listening to. And they had in their collection, they also had Donna Summer, things like that. My father's not a huge rock fan necessarily since then, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, he listened to Elvis, listened to Meatloaf, but that was it. But then my introduction to Bruce was through my brother in about 1982 or so. He's 7 years older than I am. We shared a room.
Yeah.
And he just one day put on back in the day, as we listened to cassettes in the bedroom. So we put on Born to Run. So that was my first introduction. And I remember liking, because I was still very young then, right? So I remember liking Jungle Land. And part of the reason I like Jungle Land is because I liked the way Bruce howled at the end of it, like the noise they made and all that stuff. So that was like my little innocent introduction to Bruce. But then right around the same time, within a year or so, I was introduced to the Nebraska album. And that was the one that really hooked me in, because it was part of the reason was that we listened to that is because sharing a bedroom with my brother, when we listened to music, we had to be a little bit quieter.
Sure.
We were listening at nighttime when everybody else was sleeping. So Nebraska fit into that. And once I started hearing those songs, I was so young at the time. And when I think back on it, 8, 9 years old,
yeah,
I probably shouldn't have been connecting with the music the way I did at that point, with that kind of music anyway. But I did. And ever since then, it really has just been nonstop. So it was after that, obviously, 2 or 3 years later, Born in the USA comes out. And then the box set was a huge thing for me. And as the rest is history, as they say.
Julian, what about Nebraska spoke to you? And besides, you've already mentioned that it's a little bit quieter, so that way it was easier for you guys to sneak it away. Mm-hmm. But what do you think? Can you articulate why that spoke to you so much?
Yeah, there's definitely a very direct connection with that. And this is it. It's pretty simple. Having a brother, my older brother, 7 years older than me. So when I was 8, 9 years old, he was 15, 16 in high school. And we really connected and bonded over Highway Patrolman.
Okay.
That was a song about, obviously, about brotherhood and all that stuff.
Sure.
So that song became like our song at the time. That was a song that we bonded over. And then other songs on the album, it was really the first time that I recognized, like, all right, this guy is from the same place I'm from.
Yeah.
Like, he's also from New Jersey. And I think maybe in the beginning, there was obviously a time in my life when I didn't realize that he was from New Jersey. There was a brief period of time when I didn't know that. And then once I started listening to Nebraska, State Trooper comes on, and I'm like, I know what he's talking about. I've driven down that road before.
Yeah.
I've been on the New Jersey Turnpike with my family. I was in the front seat of the car. Back then, we sat in the front as kids. And
yeah, we did.
Yeah. I was listening to music that I could really relate to. Even though I was really young, I still was able to relate to it in a very innocent way. Not the same way I relate to music now. It's just a very literal sense of, hey, this guy is from New Jersey and I'm from New Jersey also. And back then that was like very important.
Yeah. And what I think is a little bit interesting is that that's some dark songs on Nebraska. Yeah. Like I often hear people will, the river was when they first really got Bruce or something, right? Especially toward if they weren't there with that early 70s stuff or the middle 70s stuff. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. That's pretty cool.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
So you talk about that, like all of us, Born in the USA happens, and the world is discovering Bruce. Talk through your journey. What have you, obviously you've continued to be a fan. Talk a little bit about like your next after Born in the USA and their stuff. What are you feeling?
Like I mentioned already, so the box set comes out in 86. Was that late 85? No, it was late 86 it comes out.
Right.
Christmas of 86.
Yeah.
And that was an absolute like game changer for me because, first of all, it was the first time I was hearing most of those songs. I actually had seen Bruce live once before that.
Yeah.
And my first show was actually before, let's see. Yeah, my first show was August of 85 at Giant Stadium.
Okay.
So this is, I guess, a little more than a year later when the box set comes out.
Okay. But
remember something, like back then, it obviously wasn't, we didn't have music at our fingertips like we do now.
Yeah, so, no, we didn't.
Yeah, so when Bruce releases a box set back then of live music, for the most part, it's the first time I'm hearing any of his music live. For the first time since I was at his concert, and the concert was 3 hours and change or whatever. It was a very brief moment for me. But now I had this music that I could play over and over again. And I did. Yeah, I just played the hell out of it. To the point where if I had done the same thing now, people might think I'm crazy. But I'm there after school. I have nothing to do. I come home. I'm the youngest of four children. And so there were times where I would come home and I was like by myself or whatever. So I could just really, it was watch TV, watch Three's Company, watch What's Happening, or listen to Bruce. And when that box set came out, I'm telling you, I listened to it over and over again. Every single song I would listen to three, four times in a row. From the opening track, Thunder Road,
yeah.
I'd listen to that repeatedly, to the point where not only did I start to memorize the lyrics, but I also memorized all the little things that Bruce was saying between songs and things like that. And,
yeah.
and also like how he said it, not just the words that he said, but how he said them. So
that's
that was
awesome.
Yeah, that was a really big moment for me when he released that box set. And also coinciding with that is, again, it goes back to the original theme where now all of a sudden my brother goes away to college.
Right.
So I'm in the room by myself now. And so now I got Bruce's music is what my full-time entertainment now. So that's when the whole thing really took off for me. And again, even just a little bit prior to that, I went to the Born in USA show at Giant Stadium, which was 5 minutes down the road.
Sure.
Yeah. So it was, and then from there, I would have to fast forward a little bit. I was thinking about this too the other day. The only tour that I didn't see, that I haven't seen since Born in USA, was the Tunnel of Love. And the reason for that is because, I believe, my mother got completely swept up in the whole Born in USA craze, like most people did, right? And then once that sort of faded away a little bit, she wasn't a hardcore fan enough to say, oh, let's go see Bruce on the Tunnel of Love tour now. Let's buy Bruce's Tunnel of Love. And me being at the time, whatever I was, 14 years old, no money, no car.
Sure.
I had no way to get out and go buy the album. I had no Spotify or YouTube or whatever. So there was a little bit of a lull there in the 87, 88 years. And then I guess everybody else, when Bruce broke up the band, I took a little bit of a break more. And then things started to really pick up again for me when he released the two albums, Human Touch and Lucky Town. That was my senior year of high school. And I just took those to college with me and played the hell out of them again and annoyed the hell out of everybody in my dorm room.
So I'm curious, how did you feel? I always think it's interesting, right? Because I was not a hardcore fan back in the day of when the band got fired, right? Mm-hmm. So I always think it's interesting. What were you thinking and feeling when you're in high school and here's this one of your musical heroes? Wait a minute, how can you disband the E Street Band? So what were you thinking?
You know what? I don't know, because I don't have any recollection of that, to be honest with you.
No. That's...
Yeah, because at the time now, I was in about 7th or 8th grade.
Yeah.
The breakup happened in 88, right? It would have been in 8th grade, going into high school. I had so many other things at that point. Because again, it was a little bit of a downward trend for me at that point.
Yeah.
After the whole Born in the USA and box set thing. And then just being at that point in my life where I was experiencing new things as a boy, I don't have any memory of really saying to myself like, oh my God, I can't believe Bruce broke up the band. And again, part of the reason for that probably has to do with the fact that the news wasn't delivered the same way that it is now.
You know? That's a good point. It is not, right? It is, everything is amplified.
Yeah. We would have known about it. If something like that had happened, we would have known about it 5 minutes after it happened these days. But back then, the only way I got the news of something like that was either listening to WNEW in New York City or maybe People Magazine or something like that. Might have had those little notes that said Bruce Springsteen has decided to take a break from whatever. That's really the only way I would have gotten the news. But I just had all these other things going on in life at that point where...
Yeah.
It didn't really hit me the way that it probably would have hit me now.
I always like to preface this, Julian, with the number of times you've seen Bruce is not a fair barometer of how big of a fan you are. But for the record, you've mentioned a couple of times seeing him, and you mentioned you've made multiple tours. Are you someone who counts?
I don't count officially. I don't count very carefully. It's the story of my life. But I know that I am in the range of 45 to 50.
Okay.
Somewhere around that.
Okay.
Around that area.
Yeah.
And I am counting. So I also count times when I didn't see him in like an arena or stadium or something like that. I'll throw in the Springsteen on Broadway.
Sure.
And I've seen Bruce play at the Stone Pony with Joe Grushecki when I was a junior in college. It would have been 95. I do count that. Back in the day, there were a few times where I would say the reunion tour, I saw Bruce 5 times on that tour.
Okay.
So that would have been like that. That might be like my personal record for the most times seeing him on a single tour. But yeah, I'm in a range of about 45 to 50, something like that.
All right. So did you see any on this last tour?
I did. I went to the first and third show at MetLife Stadium.
All right.
And
so
really...
we might as well pull off the Band-Aid. Your thoughts on the static set list?
It's interesting. It's an interesting topic because I could see why people would be bothered by it, right? And then I could see why people wouldn't be bothered by it. And I think a lot of let me put it this way. When I found myself being bothered by it, I was only watching from afar. I was on Twitter, I was on Facebook, whatever it may be. And I was scratching my head saying, I wonder why he would do this, right? Why would he do this at this point in his career? But once I got in the building, all of a sudden, it didn't matter to me anymore.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't seen Bruce at that point, in about 7 years. And so for me, it didn't matter at all. The first time I saw him again on that tour, I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less that he had played the same songs 2 nights prior or 3 nights prior, or whatever it was. And then I will say this, and then when I saw him on the third show, the set list was different again, a lot different.
Yeah.
And I got lucky that first night he played a wide variety of songs that, you know, and some songs that he hadn't played. So I can't say that I saw two shows that were exactly the same. I'll say this, and I know this is probably would bother some people to hear this, but my thoughts also are there are people out there that go to 25 shows, 30 shows a tour. And I think if you do that, you're signing up for, hey, I'm going to see pretty much the same show for the most part. I don't know. I don't think anybody really should have complained about it. I could see their point a little bit. My thing was like, hey, I found it interesting. My question would be like, why do that now? Why would he change up now? That's really the only thing that I would say about that.
Yeah, I know Little Steven has talked about that there's a narrative he wants to tell. And I have been very vocal on this show that I understand being disappointed that you're not getting the chance to check something on your bingo card. I wanted to see where the bands are. I wanted to see something from Trax, but I don't understand being angry at him. The only person, I do say this every time, Julian, that I think the only people that have a legitimate gripe are the people that prepaid for all the Nugs downloads.
Yeah.
And okay. I'd be calling them going, excuse me, when I paid for this, I did not expect 95% of the songs to be the same every time.
Yeah.
I want a refund.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love what you're saying. I had a guest say that his perspective, the set list is the final score of a football match, but a game, right? But you don't understand like the Cowboys only lost by 12 points or 14 points the other day against Green Bay. If you just look at the score versus the reality, is they got their butts handed to them the whole game. It was not even close. So I think that the set list, it can give you some thoughts on it, but basically you're there, you're in the atmosphere, you're there with the with your friends and your other Springsteen fans, and it's just a great experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned roughly 40 or so, 45 shows. Tell me some stories. Tell me some highlights of it, and then I want to get to your little project. Are there some shows that stood out? You've obviously, all of us who got lucky enough to go to Broadway, that's a special memory for a lot of us. But how about you? Other shows that stand out? Other memories?
Yeah, there definitely are. Of course, Broadway was unbelievable, but I was at the shows lucky enough to be at the show that was like the storm show here at MetLife Stadium, where the show didn't start until I guess it was about 10:30, ended at 2 a.m. or something like that. That was a big one. That was really a really big show for me. I think what stands out for me is that sort of every single time I go see Bruce, I end up saying that's the best show I've seen. And that's not, people might hear me say that and be like, oh, you're just saying X, you're a Bruce fan, you're a nut. But it is true. I remember there was a stretch there for a while. I went to the show. There was a show in 2009 during the last, they were the final shows that he played at what was Giant Stadium at the time.
Okay.
And there was a particular show, I want to say it was like a Tuesday night. At the top of my head, I think it was like October 9th or something like that.
Okay.
And I remember it being very cold out, to the point where we had to wear winter jackets and like hats and stuff like that. Okay. And I remember saying to myself, man, I wonder how the hell the band is like still incredible and it's really cold out tonight. And I just remember that particular night saying to myself, leaving that show saying, you know what? That was like the best show I've seen. It's like the best Bruce show I've seen. And then I remember the next time I went might've been, is it possible that I went to see him in 2009 and then probably didn't see him again until 2012? I think so.
Yeah, that would make sense because it was that was Working on a Dream, and then
correct.
Yeah, and you may not have gone because didn't Seeger sessions after that. Yeah, and Clarence. Yes, yeah. But yeah, so then 12.
Yeah, and then going back at same 2009, leaving there saying, wow, that was like the best Bruce show I've seen. And then going in 2012 and saying, wow, that was the best Bruce show I've seen.
Yeah.
And then going in 2016 with my daughter for the first time, and then my sister the next night, saying, wow, those are the best shows I've seen.
Yeah.
That's a common theme for me, is that like every show is the best show I've seen. But yeah, the one that stands out for me probably the most is 2012 with the storm, just because there was so many things happening.
Oh, that sounds really powerful.
It was an interesting day. And part of it was this project that I'll talk to you about in a second was really started out as like a bigger project. It was supposed to be about people who have been on stage with Bruce to sing, to dance, to Dancing in the Dark, or also to sing like the kids when they sing Waiting on a Sunny Day.
Yeah.
But there were also some women who got up in the 70s before he did Dancing in the Dark. He would bring people up for a couple of other songs. One of them later, in the early 80s, he would bring them up for Sherry Darling. So anyway, on this particular night, that day I dedicated to doing a huge day of filming.
Okay.
And I was really concerned that the show was going to be canceled, because I had showed up that morning at 9 a.m. to get online. It was going to be my first time queuing up, as they say, and getting in the pit. I'd never been in the pit before. And so I had done all this planning and preparation and all this other stuff. And it was a Saturday and it was gorgeous out. It was my birthday at that end, September 22nd, my birthday. And then it became Bruce's birthday the next day. But I remember being like, oh my God, this is going to be terrible. I had this whole thing planned. The show is going to be canceled. And I was like really concerned by that. And then we waited in the tunnel. And then they ushered us in and the show went on and everything. And like I said, it went from my birthday to his birthday, which also made it a little bit more special for me. And then so one of the other shows that stands out for me is 2016. I took my daughter for the first time. So she would have been 14 years old at the time. She had never seen Bruce. She had known about, obviously, everything, so much about him through me. But her and I really bonded over music back when I used to drive her to school and stuff like that. We would listen to a bunch of stuff, including like Justin Bieber and that whole genre. But then I would introduce her to Bruce. And so this was like her first Bruce show was in 2016. That was a big one for me. Yeah. That I will say, let me add in right here. Speaking of set list, that would have been one of the only times where I was maybe a little bit disappointed in a set list, only because I was taking my daughter to the show and it was a very like dark set list. I remember it was not one of his more uplifting big party songs, things like that. So he left out some of the classics. I remember it was the night he played Into the Fire. Mm-hmm. And he dedicated it to one of the firefighters who was killed. Yeah. So that was a slight disappointment.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, just because you wanted her to have this great experience. And
yeah.
So that's cool. Yeah, and there is that something. A lot of memories, I find that, Julian, when I'm talking to people, that when they mention favorite concert memories, it's often more about who they're going with versus the actual show itself, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I think part of that, or all of it, is really, because like we discussed before, like a set list is going to change or it's going to stay the same. Performance is, generally speaking, similar every night or whatever. But it's about the memory that you make at the concert.
Yeah.
In fact, let me bring this up to you.
Sure.
Because I think it fits. It's very fitting right now. I went to the first and the third show this past summer at MetLife, right? The first night I went with my daughter, my wife, my sister, and a couple of other people. We sat straight away in the low part. I think it was like the mezzanine, like second level.
Okay.
You know, we had pretty good seats for a massive stadium. Good, nice view and all that stuff. Sound was great. All that stuff. Great show. Loved it. I said, man, I've missed this. And I was really pumped up because I was going to the third show by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and the reason I was pumped up is because I like to do that sometimes.
Sure.
Go to a show by myself and just experience. I'm very into observing and stuff like that, the crowd and all that stuff. So I was very excited about this, going there by myself. And you know what? The set list was incredible. A lot of people think maybe the best one of the entire tour. I can't argue that. But the experience overall really wasn't the same as two nights prior or whatever it was, because I was by myself. I wasn't with anybody to share it with. It was significantly warmer that night also, just coincidentally. But it's true. I think if you go to a show with your friends, with your family, you could have really different experiences. It's great to be with people like, all right, I just met this person a couple of hours ago. They're a huge Bruce fan. I'm a huge Bruce fan. That's great. But it's a little bit different than being there with people that you've bonded with for years over the music. So I totally know what you're saying. It makes perfect sense that people would look at each show like about, it's interesting that you said that. Each show is different depending on who you're with.
Absolutely. All right. I talk about this project that you were wanting to do and what you ultimately did. We haven't talked about is making films part of your day gig?
It is not. I shouldn't say that. It traditionally, generally isn't. I work at a newspaper with the New York Daily News, which you can see here. There's a couple of back pages that are Bruce themes.
Yeah.
Dancing in the Dark, that was when the Super Bowl lights went out.
Yeah.
And there's a couple over there that you can't see. So I work at the New York Daily News. I work in the sports department here. Over the years, I have done what I would say are several short films This is a short film too, but I did a video for one of the local police departments about the 100th anniversary of their department. I've done some stuff for work on I did a short video on the Special Olympics came to town. So I have done some things. I wouldn't necessarily call myself a filmmaker, but I would call myself a journalist and a storyteller. Right. And that all applies to this.
Sure.
Yeah. So, all right. So as far as this project goes, it started out, like I said before, it was going to be a bigger project. I mean, I actually had 85% of it done at one point where I spoke to maybe 10 or 15 different people who had been on stage with Bruce by invitation. Like, hey, you know, Dancing in the Dark, Courtney Cox, that whole thing. I spoke to some little kids who sang with him and all that stuff. The night of the storm show, I happened to be directly in front of a child who was brought up on stage to the point where I passed him right over my shoulders. I actually thought, believe it or not, that Bruce, and I really did 100% think this, Bruce looked down when he stopped singing the song and said, "Come on, brother." And I actually thought he was looking at me.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why he would have been, but back at the time, because he was looking like right over my shoulder. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, that was all, I had all that stuff that was on film or on cell phone. But anyway, it was a bigger project that I was working on for many years and it stalled. But within, in the right in the middle of this film, this at the time was maybe an hour and a half long. I had this like 25 minute segment about two women who jumped on stage without an invitation back in 1978 during Rosalita in Phoenix, Arizona, and they ended up making it into the Rosalita video, the famous video that we all have seen, where Bruce gets basically attacked and tackled and kissed, thrown to the stage. And I think I immediately recognized that as the best part of this project that I was working on. Not only did the footage turn out to look the best, probably, even though it doesn't look, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a professional filmmaker. So some of the footage that I have, even in this film, people would say, oh, it doesn't look, it's not ideal, but I did what I did. I still got it done. It just was the best part of the larger project that I had been working on. So it's a 20-minute film, 20, 22 minutes, something like that now. And it's about, again, these two women that I was able to track down that jumped on stage that night. And the way I tracked them down, really, I hate to say it, I would like to give myself a little bit more credit for this, but really wasn't that hard. Because the times that we live in, it's pretty easy to find anybody these days.
Yeah.
And this was even 10 years ago. I actually did the interviews 10 years ago. And then life just happened. Things stalled for a while. But I put a blog post up in the Phoenix New Times, or I had them. I spoke to one of the reporters who wrote a story about this. And he said, this reporter, Julian Garcia, is looking for anybody who was on stage with Bruce back in 1978. And 2 months later, if not less than that, month and a half or so, I got an email. And it said, hey, that's one of the people that was on stage is my grandmother. And then I got another email that said, oh, that was me on stage that night. Somebody sent me this article and that was me. And actually, at one point, I got another email from somebody who said they thought they knew the name of one of the other women. But I just couldn't track it down. I couldn't okay. track that person down. So I have two of the women, though. One of them jumped up at the end of the song, tackled Bruce, was on top of him. If you're familiar with the video, he gets tackled and his back is to the stage. Somebody starts making out with him. One of the other women is the one that just went up on stage and put her hand out and touched him.
Yeah.
And then just walked away. It's a pretty cool film. I think it's 20 minutes again. It's an interview with Dick Wingate, who at the time was Bruce's product manager. He's a very big music industry guy. And I found him, I don't remember exactly how I tracked him down, but I interviewed him in New York City one day, and he's in the film too. So it's a prominent role in the film. Gave me a lot of background information on how this came to be. And the story basically was like, hey, his job was to get Bruce to promote Darkness on the Edge of Town. And Bruce didn't want to promote it because he just wanted to let the album come out and speak for itself.
Right.
As we know, Bruce is not big on commercials and things like that. The only thing he agreed to do was let them film that particular concert. And as Dick Wingate tells it, nobody knew this was going to happen at all. It was a total surprise. And when it happened, he said he felt like he had struck gold because he knew at that moment that those women jumping up on stage was going to make that video incredible. It was going to put it over the top. And it did. He said, even without them, the performance that night was obviously great. It's Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band in a fairly small venue. But the women jumping up on stage became just one of those great rock and roll moments. And there was an interview done a few years ago during the peak time of COVID. Remember, Bruce was on Apple Music.
Yes.
I forget the guy's name.
Really good interview, though.
It was a great interview. It was like an hour long.
Yeah, this guy, I think, was one of the best, most insightful interviews. And I can't remember his name either, but I remember at the time going.
Yep.
Yeah, gosh, this guy's good.
He was really good. His name is Zane something.
That's
Zane
it. Yeah.
Something. Yeah. So anyway, in this interview, Bruce actually talks about the moment. And he just calls it a lovely piece of rock and roll history or whatever, something like that. And so it really, to me, when I set out to find those women, I did say that to myself. I said, this is such an iconic moment in the history of rock and roll. And I was trying to look at it like that, not just a moment for Bruce, but really a moment in rock and roll history. Coincidentally, it happened to be part of a show that was on back in the day called Heroes of Rock and Roll. It was a documentary at the time that aired in 1979. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's just a really great moment in Bruce history and rock and roll history. And I interviewed these two women. They gave me the background, how it all happened, who they were with that day, what they did before the show. I have some footage of them walking around the arena, things like that. So it's a really like fun film, short, to the point. But I think it's really cool. And I've gotten really good feedback from a lot of different Bruce fans. And I just think it's something that I'm trying to get out there. I want Bruce fans to see it because I think it's not only do I think it's a good story, but it's pretty unique, in my opinion. We've all heard stories of fans and how much people love him and how the fans interact together and all that stuff. But this is such a unique moment. So for me to be able to get these two women to talk and find them and stuff like that, I was really happy to be able to do that. And I just I really want to show this to as many Bruce fans as I can.
Yeah, and we're going to get into how people can see it and everything, but I wanted to give you a little feedback. You were nice enough to send me the link. I watched it, and it took me a little bit of while to get it because life was busy, as you talked about, right? And I was struck by one, it is very, tells a compelling story. And two, one of the things that I found amusing is you were smart enough to edit. Sometimes they're totally disagreeing with each other.
Yeah.
Because memory is memory, right? I can't tell you how often my lovely bride and I have argued, and we both are convinced we're right. Mm-hmm. And you wish those TV shows, let's do the replay. You wish that would really happen sometimes, so you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that was so well done.
Oh, thank you.
Of you showing them, just you don't correct anyone. You let it speak because it shares. This is their memories, and after a while, your memory becomes fact in your mind.
Oh, yeah. That was really, I appreciate that. And that was really the point of that particular part in the film, to show, you've asked me a lot of questions tonight about my history with Bruce Willett. And sometimes I think we remember things maybe slightly different than they actually happened.
Yeah.
And that was the moment where they were talking about how the arena was set up. And the one woman said that there were metal folding chairs on the floor that they sat on. And the other woman said there were no chairs. You just stood there. It was standing room only. And they kept going back and forth. And the ticket prices, one said it was like $8.50. The other one said it was $4. So I went back and forth between the two, one saying one thing, one saying the other. But the point is, one was to be funny about it, yeah, but also just to show how this particular event happened so long ago.
Yes.
That as memorable as it was, even the people who were directly involved didn't remember it exactly how it went down. And there's another moment in there where, I don't know if you picked up on it, but I know of one other person at least who did pick up on it. And I won't get into details, but there's one of the women really misremembers something that happened. And if you watch it again, you'll probably see what I'm talking about. But I think that was really the point of to show, hey, this happened so long ago, and we all have these different ways that we remember things. And I've had that happen to me too with Bruce stuff, even. I was writing something once and I was trying to remember, it was during the Ghost of Tom Joad era. And I remembered I had gone on a trip when I was in college. And in my mind, for the last 20 years, that trip happened after that album came out. And I went back and I looked at it. I looked at the trip that I went on. I looked it up because I went to a college convention. So I was able to look up the date. And it was completely the other way around. Completely the opposite way that I remembered it. And so that's part of this, is really it's like a nostalgic thing. It's, we bump into other fans and we're like, hey, have you ever seen this? Have you ever seen that? Or do you remember this moment or whatever? And so this for me is like really like about nostalgia. And part of nostalgia is you remember it any way you want to remember it. Whatever feels best for you is the way you're going to remember it, probably, right? So that's, I'm glad you pointed that out, because that to me is actually one of my, probably my favorite moment in the film.
Yeah, it was great. I also love, I won't spoil too much, but your the grandson being proud of his grandmother.
Yeah.
Of seeing his grandmother in a whole different perspective was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely a cool thing. She had showed up. She was the woman whose grandson that is. She lives in the Phoenix area. So when she showed up that day, it was November of whatever year it was, 2013, I believe. So it's more than 10 years now. It was like a hot, sunny day. She showed up with her grandson. I guess she just wanted him to come along for the hell of it. And I ended up speaking to him about it, about his memories of seeing his grandmother in this video. And he really added a lot to the film. He's very, very funny. His just his memories of seeing his grandmother like on YouTube, running up on stage, kissing a rock star. If you think about it, if you had seen your grandmother or your mother or whoever else in some classic 70s video, it'd blow your mind. And this kid got the chance to see that.
It would totally blow my mind. And I think it's great. All right, Joyant, where can people see it? Where can they see the film?
Right now, the answer to that is nowhere.
Okay.
But I'm hoping that is going to change. Actually, right now, I don't know if this is going to air before, or not air, but stream.
Yeah.
This Saturday coming up, I'm actually doing a screening of the film in my area where I live in New Jersey, in Boone, New Jersey. A very small venue. It holds 40, 50 people type of thing. It's not even a theater. I'm having a screening on Saturday. I've had a screening of it back in August before the first, was it the first show? The first Bruce show? Might have been the second one. It was before the second Bruce show at MetLife Stadium. I screened it at a place across the street, a restaurant. And there were a bunch of like Spring Nuts, people from the Facebook group that were there. I would say that day I screened it three times, probably a total of about 50 people saw it that night, that day. I'm expecting about 45 people or so on Saturday.
Okay.
Outside of that, I don't have anything planned right now. I don't plan on putting this up on like YouTube or something like that yet. One of the reasons is, quite honestly, is I don't have the rights to some of the footage, the music and stuff like that. So it'll probably be taken down.
Right.
I've had people ask me on Facebook, hey, I can't make it to your event on Saturday, but is there a way I can watch this? And I would say this, I am absolutely open to anybody who wants to see this film. I could send it to them. I have no problem with that at all. Like I sent it to you. So if anybody does want to see it, I can provide my information later, and I would be happy to send it to people. Because my goal at this point is I just want people to see it because I worked hard on it and I'm happy with the results. And I've gotten the kind of feedback that I've gotten from people. I had one person say that they hope every Bruce fan out there gets a chance to see this, which was really nice to hear. So yeah, that's it. I don't have any official plans right now, but I hope to get it out there.
All right. So yes, this will come out before Saturday. So we're talking, it will be Saturday the 27th.
Yep.
If someone wants to go, do they need to reach out to you to make sure we're not getting in trouble with the fire marshal? You want to just name the place? What do you want to do?
Yeah, I'll just tell you, it's a place called The Sanctuary in Booton, New Jersey. It's Morris County. Again, it's about 20 minutes west of MetLife Stadium. The surrounding towns are like Parsippany, Mountain Lakes. But it's called The Sanctuary. It's going to happen at 7 p.m. on Saturday, January 27th. I can be reached. My email address, I guess I'll just tell you that right now, is juliang922@gmail.com. That's J-U-L.
Email me that.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I have it, just in case. Isn't that where I emailed you?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So good. I've got it then.
Yep. Yeah. What else is there? The Saturday night, January 27th, 7 o'clock. So if anybody in the area, again, it's a 20-minute film. I'm not expecting anybody to drive an hour and a half or 2 hours or get on a plane and come see it. If you're in your area, it'll be fun.
Yeah, and I think so. And I really enjoyed the link you sent me. It was, and the other part I think is interesting is when they were promoting the No Nukes release, right? The DVD. Mm-hmm. Bruce talked a lot about that he was a little superstitious of being filmed. Because he said, I thought if I watched myself, we might lose the magic.
Yeah.
Right. Something like that. I'm misquoting him. But the idea, right, if you become self-conscious of what you're doing, you may lose that naturalness. And so knowing that context, hearing him, I don't want to promote, and how the guy had to sell him on, okay, we got to do something, right? And the idea, okay, I guess you could film us, but not for everyone. And so, yeah. It's really great.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts before we get to the Mary question?
No, I think, like I said, I did this because the one thing that sticks out for me is that, like, whenever we do these things, people, I don't have to ask you this, right? I already know this. That when you tell people, oh, I have a Bruce Springsteen podcast, there's going to be people out there that are like, this guy is like a psycho, like a Bruce psycho. Like, people think these things, right? We already know that. People that do what I've done, they make a film about Bruce, a short film, or there's people that do a wide variety of things that are a lot of people consider, or they just ask, what are you doing that for? But you just do it because of the love, like the passion that you have for this particular topic. And like you said, it's similar to like when you go to the show and it's not about the set list that night. It's about who you're with. It's really about the connection with the fan and like really wanting to, like, for me in this situation, my whole adult life, I've been a journalist, and I've gotten used to, like, one of my loves in life is like telling stories and things. So this kind of fits in to everything. I have this like passion for like Bruce Springsteen music. And the man himself, this love of like journalism, storytelling, creativity. So this all kind of fits into that. And it was like really the perfect combination of things for me in that regard. So that's really what this is about.
I loved it. I am glad it gave us an excuse to visit. All right. I'm going to let you go. But before we do, we got to do the Mary question.
All right.
So if you are listening to this, because you're a friend of Julian's or his family, thank you. He made you very proud. I end every podcast with a Mary question. Jay Armstrong, speak of a Philadelphia Eagle fan, was a high school teacher. He is now retired, but when he was teaching, he would give the song Thunder Road to his high school seniors. They were honors English class. They would read the lyrics. They would talk about the themes that Bruce explores and would ask the question to his students, does Mary get in the car? Julian, that is your question. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
Of course. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that's a no-brainer, honestly. Why wouldn't she? If somebody presented you with that, with the way he, the invitation that he gave her to get in, and at that point, I don't see why she wouldn't. The only reason, the only one slight reason maybe, is that little insult that he dished out where he says, you ain't a beauty, but hey, you're all right. Maybe she might have walked away at that point, but if she didn't walk away at that point, then she definitely did get in the car.
My wife always says no, she didn't get in the car because he called her ugly.
Oh,
that isn't what he meant.
Nah, so, yeah, but that is a fair point though.
Yeah, it is. All right. Julian, thank you. This was so much fun. Best of luck. I hope you figure out a way to get a lot of fans to see the film. I just adored it. And good luck. I hope you get a lot of people showing up this Saturday night. And just thank you for doing this. I think it's an important, a nice little slice of Bruce history. And you did a great job of capturing it. So good job, my friend.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I will keep everybody updated on it. Hopefully something happens. But if not, hey, at least we all get to enjoy it somehow. So
that sounds
thanks for
great.
Having me on.
No problem. Listeners, go check it out. For now, be safe, be kind. We'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
There we go. Another episode. I'm about to go through a couple of things where you can reach me and give me feedback. So if you want to skip this, I understand. But I do hope you check it out every once in a while. I'm available on Twitter at JesseJacksonDFW. The show is available at SetLustingBruce. You can send me an email, setlustingbruce@gmail.com. You can send me a voicemail at 469-249-2442. I am currently doing a few other podcasts. Perfectly Good Podcast, John Hiatt from A to Z, where Sylvan Groth and I discuss every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. My Babylon 5 podcast is Last Best Hope for Conversation, where Lou Karen and I discuss every episode of Babylon 5 in chronological order. I still am doing Next Stop Everywhere, the Doctor Who podcast with my brother in time, Charles Skaggs. And then finally, How Many Podcasts, the only podcast on the internet that counts, where my buddies and I discuss pop culture. You can go to our Patreon page and support the podcast for as little as $1 a month. You can go to our Facebook page, like, and please, please go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and leave a 5-star rating and review for all of the podcasts that I'm doing. It's okay if you don't listen to them, but if you subscribe and rate, it really will make my day better. Thank you, and I will talk to you soon.
You just heard the fun talking, hard rocking, music loving, album ranking, fan thinking, joy spreading, lyric reading, story sharing podcast that is the one, the only, Set Listing Bruce. The theme for Set Listing Bruce was written by David Rosen, used by permission.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.